Welcome back to September Living, a show for us baby boomers and beyond. And before we get back into our program, we'd like to thank our great sponsors here. And Scott, I know you've got one in particular that you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, we've been working with American Seniors Association for quite a while now. And they're growing so rapidly that they have to redo their site. They actually moved from Texas to Florida. And
that's not a bad problem to have.
No, it's not. It's not. And they're really, really a wonderful membership group with which to be affiliated. If you want to learn more, their new site will be up in just a few weeks. They're going to have some new offerings, not only healthcare, but a lot of travel stuff. I think that our listeners are really going to like what they see. They've been working on this for about 3 weeks. But it's AmericanSeniors.org, AmericanSeniors.org. Check it out. I'm a member. I love it. And let's get back to the show.
Well, Scott, we are so fortunate to have Deborah Schuster with us from Deborah K. Schuster & Associates. And Deborah is an elder care and estate planning attorney. And she is full of information, great information that we get to hear and learn about today. And I know a lot of people have so many questions, Deborah, that pertain to what you do, what you know, and there's somebody in everyone's life that they can think of right now that would likely, have a need for what you do. Not to mention the fact that you just had mentioned previous in previous segments about your children before they went off to college. So we need to start this early and not wait for catastrophes
exactly.
And crises. We've got all of these documents out there, and the layperson doesn't understand what they all are, hence the reason that we have attorneys like yourself. But how do you get us to understand some of these documents and know what we should be focusing on and having in place and talking to you about?
Basically, education, shows like this, because you can go on the internet, and of course, there's lots of sites where you can download documents, and I'm in no way saying that people absolutely should not do that, but they're limiting. They're basically mm-hmm. fill in the blank, and when you go to an attorney, they will talk to you about options that you may never have even considered. So the documents that you can draft with an attorney really can make sure that everything that you want, as close as possible, can be reflected. So we were talking about wills and trusts. So a will is basically a wish list. If you do not have beneficiary designations on everything, your bank accounts, life insurance, a beneficiary deed on your house that allows you to designate who it will go to when you die, all sorts of transfer upon death designations for your cars, bank accounts, things will end up in probate. And that's a special division of the circuit court where they will take responsibility for ensuring how things should be divided up in accordance with your will. A trust basically enables you to be more specific. Again, you have to title everything in the name of your trust, but it's a document that can become effective right now. Terry, if you create a trust, you can title your house, your bank accounts, you can spend your money any way you want, but if something happens to you and you are unable to make financial decisions, your trustee would then pick up and pay bills, do what's necessary, make sure your investments are invested in accordance with, hopefully,
I could
direction.
Put everything in Scott's name here.
Yeah, there you go.
You
there
could,
you go.
But I'd make sure he was bonded.
Deborah, I've heard that if somebody doesn't have these documents in place, that in the end it will cost them more to go through probate than the money and time that they spend on the front end to ensure that they have some of these basic things in place. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Now, it will not only cost financially but emotionally, because really some of these documents are effective in sequence. So when we talk about durable powers of attorney, they become effective when you are determined, usually by your physician, to be unable to make healthcare or financial decisions. It can be that you are going in for an appendectomy, and so while you're under surgery, and afterwards when they say don't sign any legal documents, you're really not in a position to make legal decisions or financial decisions. Mm-hmm. Durable powers of attorney are effective while you are alive, but unable to make decisions for yourself. As soon as you die, they're no longer effective. So you have to have either a will that names a personal representative to make decisions for how your assets are going to be distributed and pay your last bills after you die, or have a trust where the trustee will step in and do those things.
And this sort of sounds like it becomes a very much a family or generational type of service that you provide. And Debbie, when you sit down with the family, do you find that after initially going through all of this with them, that you've created sort of a top of mind awareness and they're more open to talking about these things, or if something in their life changes, do they come to you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Hopefully. And this really, estate planning is just a part of what we do, because we are very holistic, because people have more than just legal needs.
Right.
And because of the nature of our clients, very often you will have an adult who may start declining in health and have an adult child who has a developmental disability that's lived with them in their house all their life. And so we then are working with not only the adult who may need to go into assisted living, but then how do we make sure that the adult disabled child's needs are being met? And that obviously is top of mind to that parent.
Sure. Yeah, and Terry, you and I have talked about this, you know, as recently as last week, about how the extended family, you know, living in one dwelling is becoming more and more the norm.
Two generations under one roof. And I'm sure, Deborah, you see that all the time.
Sure.
Well, we're speaking with Deborah Schuster of Deborah K. Schuster & Associates. And Deborah, you have so much information here. Having an attorney on is wonderful, because you get to ask a lot of questions, and our listeners get to jot things down and get to do so for free. I'm sure they would have a lot of questions as well, but we really want to focus on what we know everybody has to face. And as we're talking about this, some of the questions, such as, can spouses make decisions for each other? Obviously, they can if the right documents are in place.
Exactly.
Do parents have the right to make a decision on behalf of their adult children? And again, you can if you have the right documents in place. But if you don't, how challenging is that?
It's very challenging. So there are a number of myths. People assume that their spouse can automatically make decisions for them, and that's not true. Now, very often in a hospital setting, if something happens to your spouse, the nurses, the doctors will turn to the spouse and ask, you know, how do you want to handle this? But legally, if someone needs to go from a hospital to, for example, to a rehab center, someone, a healthcare provider, will ask, are you the attorney, in fact, the person that's appointed under your spouse's durable power of attorney for healthcare? And if that document is not in place, what will happen is someone will likely have to go to court and be appointed guardian, and that is absolutely not something that someone wants to have happen.
So a bossy spouse does not trump, you know, having documents in place.
Right.
Or lack of documents, for that matter.
Exactly.
Okay, good
exactly.
to know. Exactly.
And same with a bossy parent. A bossy parent, no matter how much a mom wants to stand up and say, you have to talk to me, but it's not true. Once your child turns 18, that child needs to have these documents in place, unless if that child does not have the mental ability, the capacity to create those documents. So if someone has been disabled since birth, the parent, once that child turns 18, would have to go to court and become their guardian.
Otherwise, then that guardian would be who? The state? Who's the guardian if the parent isn't at that point?
Very often, there's no guardian.
Oh.
And that's a big problem.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, these are questions that, especially with the kids going to college, that just kind of caught me out of left field. Didn't even think of that.
We've got so many questions here, and there's so much information, and I know it's mind-boggling to try and sift through it all. But this is great information, Scott. I know we're coming up here on a break, but folks, this is great information. Deborah has so much information here, and we'll get her information up on our website. You go to septemberliving.com, click on our radio tab, and there you'll find all of Deborah's information to reach out to her. We'll be back here right after these messages. Stick around for more from September Living.